Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Large Nerdron Collider podcast, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, after our holiday extended break, is Jonathan Strickland.
I am not dead yet.
Yay!
Yeah, I mean, it was close call, y'all. Our extended hiatus wasn't just because the holidays. I don't mind saying this because I've said it on some other podcasts. I had a significant medical scare. December 30th was the first one, but another one happened the following week, and it resulted in having to get surgery, and then I had a recovery from surgery, and it's just been kind of a nightmare situation. Ariel has been very patient and supportive through the entire process, and I am thankfully through the worst of it, as far as I can tell, fingers crossed, and back to talk about things what are geeky.
Yeah, there was a whole bunch of that happened in the past few weeks, but we're going to ignore a lot of that and talk about what's new. And as far as patient goes, I mean, like, I've had auditions and I've had other stuff to do. So, like, I'm not
She was busy. She wasn't spending the whole time giving me puppy dog eyes and saying, I sure hope you're feeling better. Just, you know, but she did check in. So yeah, I don't want to give the wrong impression.
Also, like, I want to say one of our listeners on Discord was like, I can't wait for Ariel to admonish you or to get back to Ariel admonishment again. I'm going to try not to admonish you too much because I don't want you to have to recover from any sick burns along with.
Yeah. considering that my illness was related to high blood pressure, like I can just hold that over people. I'm like, please don't upset me. You'll kill me.
But any time that I gave you puppy dog eyes and asked if you were, I sure hoped you were feeling better, was genuine. There was no ulterior motive because your health, my friend, is the most important thing to me.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And so we have a pretty ginormous episode lineup. We'll see if we can cover everything, but we've got a ton of stuff to talk about. Like Ariel said, obviously a bunch of news has come out since we had to take our break. And we're really just focusing on the things that happened over the last week, because to do everything would, I mean, we'd have to have like a 3-hour long episode. And I think a lot of that is because obviously during the course of the strikes, there really couldn't be any progress on any media stuff, at least any media stuff that was in the world of TV or film. And now that those have been reconciled and resolved, the floodgates are open.
Floodgates are open and lots of productions are starting it back up. And that's awesome for actors as well as for viewers. So, yay. I don't remember, Jonathan, remind me, do we start with what we've watched or do we start with 30 seconds or less?
Wow. I don't remember either. I think actually we usually start with what we've watched and then we go into 30 seconds or less. And if not, that's how we're doing it today.
Rockin'. So I've watched a bunch of geeky media over the holidays, and the new year. I finished Barry. I've started Squid Games. I watched that Batman Ugly Christmas cartoon special that I was like, oh, it's so ugly. It was really cute. It was very ugly, but it was very, very cute. I finished Echo. I started Fargo. I've restarted playing Skyrim. And my husband has started playing Dave the Diver, which is a game that Jonathan also enjoys playing. And then I watched an episode of Has-Been Hotel. I wanted to like it because it's kind of a more adult cartoon and it's got it's a musical and it's got a bunch of Broadway star actors in it, but they really lean into like the depravity of the story and it's not funny. So that's the thing is you can have cussing and adult humor and sexy jokes and all that stuff. And it can be hilarious. And everything just fell flat to me. It felt like they were trying to push it in to be edgy and.
Gotcha. Where they're leaning so hard on that they're doing it at the expense of actual clever writing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like the storyline is also one of those ones that's like a little bit of a stretch for me based on my upbringing. but yeah, I give it a fair shot and the joke, it just wasn't as funny as I had hoped it would be, but the music is banging. Like the music might be the best TV music I've heard It might be tied for Schmicago after Gallivant, not counting the first episode.
Yeah. For me, really the geeky thing. So I watched a lot of old stuff. Like I finally watched, I went through and watched all the movies that have been made so far in the Hell House series.
Okay.
And I had seen the first one before. If you're not familiar, Hell House is a found footage horror franchise, with the first one taking place in the Abaddon Hotel, this fictional hotel that's supposed to be in New York. They actually use a real abandoned hotel that's used for things like Halloween haunts in Pennsylvania. But anyway, it's about this crew that's trying to turn the Abaddon Hotel into a haunted house. And it turns out it really is haunted. And then hilarious Halloween hijinks ensue. And by hilarious, I mean horrifying and grotesque.
I was about to ask.
Yeah. Well, there are four movies in the series so far. Three of them take place in the Abaddon Hotel. The fourth one, which in some ways is a prequel, like it takes place in modern day, but they're investigating something that happened in a time before the other movies that occur in the franchise. I actually think the fourth one is probably the strongest of the series so far, which is unusual, right? Usually you with horror franchises, you start off super strong and then maybe you can get a little close to the brilliance later on. But this is one of those cases where I actually think the fourth movie might be the best one of the bunch.
Good on them.
I don't know that I can recommend it. Like if you want to see some sort of semi-schlocky found footage horror, it falls into the same traps as other found footage. Mainly, you'll be left asking, why would anyone be filming this, right? Like, that's the big problem with found footage. Unless you're doing something like security cameras that are supposed to be on all the time, you're left with the question of, why would anyone bother to, this is so mundane, there'd be no reason to waste time filming it until something scary happens. But you wouldn't have known something scary was going to happen before it happened. So it does fall into those same traps, but it's fairly entertaining. The third one is perhaps the schlockiest of the bunch, which gotcha. In some ways is fun. So that was one thing I did. The other thing, before it came out, before the first episode of season four of True Detective came out, I decided I wanted to read Robert Chambers' The King in Yellow, because that's a collection of short stories that Robert Chambers published before Lovecraft really got his start, that kind of fall into the weird fiction category, at least some of them do. And it involves things like creating fictional works of literature that end up having like supernatural powers. The main one being a play named The King in Yellow. And if you read it, you go bonkers. And that was a big influence for the first season of True Detective. Well, I knew that the fourth season was coming out and that it appeared to go back and reference stuff from The King in Yellow. So I thought, I'm going to read this. And while I was sick, I read the stories, probably not the best state of mind to do it, but I thought they were pretty good. Like, not, I wouldn't say they were brilliant, but I thought they were well-written and interesting. And then I watched the first episode of season four of True Detective. I think it's very well made. I lament the fact that there are no really likable characters, that all the protagonists are deeply damaged and not very likable, which I get is a film noir trope, but it makes it hard for me to connect with the show. But it is very well made and it's interesting. It does jump around a bit to the point where I feel like it's doing it in an effort to make it seem very spooky, supernatural, mysterious. But when the filmmaking itself is creating that kind of disorienting effect and it's not just the story, it feels a little bit gimmicky to me. I still think it's well done. I need to watch the second episode. I just haven't gotten around to it yet, but those are what I've really been focused on.
Nice. I was going to ask, I'm glad you like the stories. I was going to ask if you had read it right before you got sick. Because then that might have been the cause, but
right, yeah, I shouldn't have read the book because that's what caused my blood pressure to skyrocket. Yeah. I think I might have started it before I got sick. It's hard because like the last few weeks are all jumbled up in my head. Like that blood pressure thing, it was so bad that I couldn't think coherently, and it was so bad that when I went to the emergency room the second time, I don't remember it. I don't remember the emergency room at all. I remember the ICU, but that was hours after I had arrived at the hospital. Yeah. I was in the emergency room for hours and I have no, they gave me a lumbar puncture and I don't Ooh. Remember it.
Well, that's good. That's a good thing. Yeah,
that's what I hear.
I mean, I've not had one, but I'm just going to assume that's a really good thing.
Yeah.
Great. Well, that's the stuff that we have done. I'm sure there's a lot more, but that's just like the top of mind stuff. So now let's jump into our 30 seconds or less. Some of these might be like 15 seconds for me, Jonathan. I'll try to pad them out.
No, don't pad them out. If they're 15 seconds, some of mine are probably going a little long. So let's just do what comes naturally.
Awesome. All right, well, I get to start today, and I'm starting with the fact that it has been announced that Gillian Anderson is joining the cast of Tron 3. She'll be there with Jared Leto, Jodie Turner-Smith, and Greta Lee. Tron 3 is being called Tron Ares, and they have started filming, and that's about it. I love the first Tron movie. The second Tron movie was okay. I have no expectations for the third.
I feel the same. Like, I think the first Tron movie is fun, a little slow. Second Tron movie is beautiful, and the soundtrack is banging, but is kind of a mess. So here's hoping the third one can really nail it. Okay. One lesser-known conference that happens each year is called CinemaCon. That's when studios meet with theater owners and operators. Sony is sitting this year's event out, but it's business, not personal, as the company is trying to make up for lost time due to the recent strikes in Hollywood. So it's not that Sony doesn't love you, theater owners. They just need to wash their hair that weekend.
I mean, I wonder how many people are going to have... be affected by that when it comes to CinemaCon. All right, I have my stories wrong in my lineup, but the next one is that Invincible Season 2, Part 2, has a release date, and it is March 14th. So Jonathan and I have both watched the first half of Season 2. It's rough. It's real rough at times, and got kind of left with Invincible is on an alien planet after battling some Viltrumites. So you won't have to wait too long to see what happens next if you're following that storyline.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Hey, you got Magic the Gathering cards on my board game Clue. Hey, you got a board game Clue on my Magic the Gathering cards. Say. Yep, that's right. There's a Magic the Gathering and Clue, or Cluedo, if you have to be a Brit, collaboration coming out. It's called Ravnica Clue Edition. Up to four people can play at a time, and it comes with booster packs and stuff. It's available for pre-order now. It comes out later, I think, in February, and it retails for a whopping $70.
Golly. I do feel like it doesn't play like traditional Clue.
No, I think it does apparently play like some sort of combination between Magic the Gathering and Clue. I read the review of it. I cannot say that I feel like it's something you have to experience to really understand, because I couldn't quite grasp what the playthrough is like, but it's at least interesting.
All right. Yeah, I might have to try it at some point. Next in our 30 seconds or less, apparently my viral push to become the Thing in the new Fantastic Four movie may not be as successful as I was hoping it was. There is a rumor that Eben Moss Bachrach is being considered for the role of the Thing. I love him. He plays Cousin in The Bear, and he was also Micro in The Punisher. He's a really phenomenal actor. I like him a lot. I wouldn't be like too mad if he was the Thing, but also I still want to be Ben Grimm. So, you know, We'll have to see whether that rumor is true. When it comes to things like Marvel and DC and big major studio stuff, you often can't talk about it yes or no. Like, you can't say, no, it's not me. Yes, it is me. Sometimes you can say, no, it's not me, but also wishful thinking. So we'll have to wait and see.
Also, sometimes when they say, no, it's not me, it's totally them. Yeah. they're just
like trying Andrew Garfield.
They're just trying not to get in trouble. All right. Through Dangers Untold and Strikes Unnumbered, the latest Deadpool sequel has wrapped filming. The film, which at one time drew ire, as it seemed it would continue production through the writer's strike, with actors, you know, just making stuff up on camera, is now finished with principal photography. The movie is slated to release on July 26th of this year. Get your chimichangas ready.
Next, Kit Harington, who is Jon Snow in Game of Thrones, is producing a TV thriller, very British Western. It takes place in the Lake District of the United Kingdom, and it's called something like City of Dust? Empire of Dirt. I was close. City of Dust, Empire of Dirt. They're close. It's a working title. It's about a big city boy who returns to his family farm in the Lake District for a cousin's wedding and discovers that his family has been doing major, major drug deals. I can't wrap my head around what a very British Western would be, if that equates to American Westerns at all, or is a completely different thing. And two, the description sounds like Breaking Bad, and I don't know if I would have called Breaking Bad a Western.
Southwestern is what I would call it. Because, you know, that Albuquerque has that very unique kind of sensibility. I will say that if you needed to see a British Western, just watch John Cleese in Silverado. It's just one English actor in an otherwise American movie, but he is a lot of fun as an English sheriff. Okay.
I mean, John Cleese is a lot of fun, so.
Yeah. What's all this then? All right. Mortal Kombat 2, the film sequel, not the video game sequel, has wrapped. It's a sequel to the 2021 movie, which was okay. I mean, that movie started off great. I think the Scorpion Sub-Zero fight at the beginning is amazing. But the new movie is going to feature Carl Urban as Johnny Cage, and other faces that you can expect to see include Shao Kahn, played by Martin Ford, Princess Kitana, played by Adeline Rudolph, and Quan Chi, played by Damon Harriman, as well as more. I got high hopes for this one. We'll see.
I'm glad you've got high hopes. Yeah, the last one was fair to middling.
Yeah, I agree. Fair to Midland is like my favorite Mortal Kombat movie is still the 1990s one, the original 1990s live action one. It's schlocky as heck, but I still like it more than the 2021 film.
Yeah, yeah, same. All right, I'm digging deep into the rumor pool today, you guys, because the next thing is that apparently some people found the producer of Zelda in a Universal Parks video with them building kind of Universal, I think it's Epic, something like that.
Yeah.
And and then after someone posted that video, it got like almost immediately taken down. But now folks are wondering if we're going to get a Zelda section to our Mario World. It would be cool. It would be smart.
Yeah, it'd be neat. It would definitely pose a huge competition to Disney, which honestly I think is necessary. I think Disney needs to have that kind of crazy competition up against it to kick them into gear, because the parks I feel have been a little neglected. All right. AMC has released a trailer for The Ones Who Live, which is yet another spinoff of The Walking Dead. This is the one that's going to bring back Rick Grimes and Michonne, because if there's another penny to be wrung from this franchise, they are going to find a way to do it. The trailer looks grim and hopeless. It reinforces the message that humans are just the worst. And isn't that what you need in an election year? It comes out February 25th.
Oh my goodness. Well, that's it for our 30 seconds or less.
Yeah. I obviously have feelings about how nihilistic and grim the Walking Dead series is.
and, well, it and tells this is you not, something.
Yeah.
it tells you something when I've watched Walking Dead and I watched Last of Us, and Last of Us seemed hopeful comparatively.
Agreed. I mean, and that, yeah, we won't get into, like, even though the end of Last of Us has a definitively dark message to it, we don't need to get into spoilers or anything in case people haven't watched it yet. That series is brilliant. But I would agree with you that even with the ending of The Last of Us, it still feels more hopeful than The Walking Dead does.
All right. Now let's see how much of our other news we can get through.
Yeah, like as per usual, we decided to dwell a little on 30 seconds or less. But I mean, we're both rusty.
Yeah, yeah. And he's not just talking about my hair color. All right. So we have a bunch of stuff that we're looking forward to. I'm going to just go over that real quick. Things that I'm looking forward to: the silly Argyle movie that looks like a mix between The Lost City of D and Kingsman and Bullet Train and Stranger Than Fiction. looks dumb fun. We're getting a second season of Life or Beth, which, even if you're not an Amy Schumer fan, this is a fantastic semi-autobiographical story of her life. It deals with, like, meeting her husband, who then got an adult diagnosis of autism, even though he's a Michelin, like, and he's a Michelin star chef, so it deals with that. And it's just really good. It's really good. I'm looking forward to Avatar The Last Airbender, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And then, oddly, normally I hate scary movies, but I am vaguely intrigued by Abigail, which is a story about a little ballerina girl who gets kidnapped and then turns out to be a vampire and turns all of her kidnappers into vampires.
Yeah, it's given me a little bit of a Let the Right One In energy, which, if you have not seen Ariel, I think you would really dig it. Like, it's more of a drama than a horror movie. Either Let the Right One In or Let Me In, which is the English version of it, which I haven't seen. So I can't say I prefer Let the Right One In, because I've only seen Let the Right One In. But Let the Right One In was just brilliant and kind of dark. So for me, I would say things I'm looking forward to include Furiosa. I really am looking forward to Furiosa a lot. That comes out this summer. Borderlands, I'm looking forward to, just to see what the heck it, like, I cautiously look forward to it because I haven't seen enough of it to know whether it's going to look relatively good. Beetlejuice 2, it's another one that's coming out this fall that I'm kind of curious about. Those are, like, the big ones. I mean, I probably will see the sequel to Joker because I saw the first one, but I have the more distance I get from seeing the Joker the first time, the less I like it. So I'm not sure if I'm going to be, you know, fully on board with that by the time it comes out. But those are the ones that are really, oh, and Nosferatu. I want to see Nosferatu.
Is that coming out in 2024?
December 25th. It's Christmas Day.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I'm looking forward to many of those things too. I do have interest in Let the Right One In. I don't mind monster movies. I just don't like gory horror.
There's a little bit of gore in Let the Right One In, but that's not really what the movie's about. Like, it's got moments of that, which do shock you out of the moment, but it's not, like, unrelentingly gory, which is why I think it's actually kind of a sweet and somewhat sad friendship story, which is why I think I saw it in the movie theater and I was blown away. I thought it was great.
Yeah. I think that's part of it for me with scary movies, is it's got to have, like, a good, intriguing story and maybe some, like, uplifting bits. Mm-hmm. Or some sort of hope in there somewhere. If it's just scary for scary's sake, it's not for me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's something you could give a try. I mean, I would never tell you that you have to see it. I just think it's something that you potentially could find value in. So, something that unfortunately hasn't found a whole lot of value in the month of January is live theater. The month of January is always tough for Broadway specifically, and that's partly because, you know, it follows December, which is a big travel month. Lots of people go to New York for the holiday season. And while there, they will often seek out theater. But January tends to be a much less traveled month. So you don't have as many tourists. And it also is like, if you're in the, you're after the Tony season. So a lot of shows, if they haven't received huge accolades, may find that their audiences have dwindled down to like half full or something. And it's expensive to produce a show on Broadway. It's expensive to keep a show running on Broadway. So it's not unusual, as Tom Jones would say, for shows to close in January. It's just this January, we got quite a few closings that have either happened or have been announced. So like Gutenberg the Musical, which, you know, I knew was going to be a short run anyway. It's a two-person show. It's hard to make something like that run for a really long time.
It's a two-person show with big names.
Yeah. So yeah, you wouldn't expect it to run forever, but it's closing. Mind Mangler, which is a spinoff of Magic Goes Wrong, is closing. How to Dance in Ohio, which I understand is a really uplifting show. It involves people who are on the autism spectrum, who are actually playing the characters who are on the autism spectrum. It's supposed to be phenomenal, but it just hasn't been getting the crowds. That one's closing soon. Sleep No More, which is the incredibly immersive show. It's the retelling of the Scottish play. That one's been running in New York for quite some time, and it's fairly well known, but it's closing this year in March. And Kimberly Akimbo, which won the Tony for Best Musical, as it's announced, that's going to close in April. So yeah, lots of closings coming up in the near future.
I mean, but we always get new musicals. So like Boop the Musical, I expect that to come to Broadway soon. Dead Outlaw is opening. I know this because my friend who is in Shucked, which also either just closed or is closing this month, is now cast in Dead Outlaw, which is a comedy that's opening and sounds pretty funny. Yeah, but good thing is some of these shows that when they close on Broadway, they go on tour. So like Beetlejuice is currently on tour. Shucked is going to be on tour. Clue, there's a Clue that's coming to the 2024-2025 Broadway touring season that is it just straight to touring?
Yeah, I hadn't heard of a Clue on Broadway, so my guess is that it did not have, I mean, if it had a Broadway run, I didn't hear about it.
Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, it is sad. I hate to see shows close before they want to. Thankfully, there are new shows up and coming as well.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into some news. One bit of news that has obviously been a big part of the entertainment world is that we got the announcements for Oscar nominations.
Yeah. And a bunch of people were kind of upset that, like, I'm just going to get to the controversy right away. A bunch of people were upset that Margot Robbie and Greta Gerwig did not get nominated for like Best Director and Best Actor. Although Barbie has a lot of nominations. I don't know. I don't like when Oscars are like, well, nominate this person or this person wins because it's their time. So for them to get nominated just because they are women who made a woman empowered movie, I don't know. It feels a little false to me. I loved Barbie, but there are lots of women directors and amazing actresses of color who are nominated this year in place of that. So it's still this Oscars might break a lot of new records.
Yeah, I think part of the reason why people got upset is that Ryan Gosling got a nomination for Best Supporting Actor as Ken, but Margot Robbie did not get a nomination for Best Actress for Barbie. I did see that Whoopi Goldberg had a response to this and said that there's no such thing as a snub because it's not like collectively the Academy decided not to nominate these women. It's that when you tally up all the nominations, they did not receive the number necessary to be listed among the nominees. And it's that each individual person responded like who they thought deserved it. And collectively, that's just how it shook out. And I thought that's actually a pretty reasonable way of looking at it. It still stinks. Like it still doesn't look good when the two women who were most responsible for making that movie happen didn't get nominated, but the guy who played the himbo did.
That but also does... America Ferrera did.
Yes, she did.
Best supporting actress.
Best supporting actress. So it wasn't like it was totally overlooked. But yeah, I think that perspective, that it's not like it's, you know, a group of eight white men in a conference room somewhere smoking cigars and just deciding who gets the nod and who doesn't. It's not like that. And I think remembering that is important. I do think, I mean, I'm not big on awards. I've said this so many times. I don't like awards. Like I don't like trying to assign, you know, rankings to art. I don't like saying this art is better than that art. Like that just bothers me, especially when you're talking about things that are in wildly different genres with different perspectives and different messages. Like it just doesn't make sense to me. And I really don't like the how it creates a political discussion within Hollywood, where you have these for your consideration campaigns that are so shallow and so like obvious and callous and gross. I think it just reduces art to something that I think is so shallow that it's just disturbing to me. So I'm not big on Oscars anyway. I do think that the people who were nominated, all of them put in incredible work, and that, you know, I'm glad to see them get recognition. I just wish it weren't in the form of a competition.
Me too. I'm kind of surprised May December didn't get more noms because they did across other award series, like Academy Award. But they are nominated for Best Original Screenplay, which I'm just going to say is cool because I have a very good friend who was a small role in that movie.
Neat.
So it's kind of a very Black Swan-esque movie. It's based on a true story. It's not like exactly following the true story.
Gotcha.
And it's a disturbing story, but it's told very well.
So out of curiosity, how many of the nominated films have you seen, if you happen to know?
Oh, hold on. I've seen Barbie. I wanted to see Poor Things, but I haven't gotten there yet.
Same. Poor Things is on my list to see. I really want to see it. I've heard great things about it.
Yeah. I want to see American Fiction. There are actually a bunch that I haven't seen that I want to see this year. I just haven't got it to it. So I've seen Barbie. And then I've seen Nimona.
Okay.
I haven't seen Boy and the Heron or Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse yet. I know I could watch Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, but I think it came back to theaters, and if I haven't missed it, I want to go see it there instead. So that's two. hold on. I'm continuing to go. I saw May December. So that's three. I saw that one, not on Netflix where it's currently streaming. I saw that in the movie theater. I saw Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Mm-hmm.
So that's four of them. Ooh, Flamin' Hot has a song nominated. That's awesome. And then we get to the shorts, which I haven't watched. So I've seen four.
I've seen two.
Okay.
I've seen Barbie, and I've seen Indiana Jones and the Dumb of Destiny.
Oh, I haven't watched that one yet. It wasn't good.
I am not going to say it was not good. I am going to say I did not like it at all, and I wish it hadn't been made.
Was it better or worse than Crystal Skull?
I mean, better than Crystal Skull, but then the fact that I had high blood pressure and had to go to the emergency room was better than Crystal Skull.
Oh my goodness. Wow, that puts Crystal Skull on par with Sucker Punch.
I have never subjected myself to Sucker Punch because I know that would be truly terrible. No, I didn't like Dial of Destiny. They made some choices that I did not care for. I felt the story was kind of stupid. I don't know. I just feel like it also it's so far disconnected from the pulpy action feel of the first two films, in particular. The third one I enjoy a lot, but I don't think it's nearly as pulpy as the first two movies are. And then after that, everything just gets further and further away, and I don't like it. They also make a choice in Dial of Destiny that regarding a character who appeared in a previous film that I thought was really upsetting.
Ah, okay.
So there you go.
That's unfortunate. Among the many, so usually when the Oscar noms come out, there's like a couple movies that I want to see. There's a bunch this year that I didn't see that I want to see.
Yeah.
And I haven't had the bandwidth to go to the movie theater as much. Unless it's like I took my niece to see, I went to go see the Marvels with my niece. Right. But one of the ones that I really wanted to see that everybody I know who's seen it has loved is Godzilla Minus One, which is nominated, and it's the first Oscar nomination for Godzilla in the 70 years of Godzilla.
Yeah. Now my question is, if Godzilla wins the Academy Award, are they going to have the guts to plague that monster off stage if Godzilla takes longer than 30 seconds to thank everybody?
I mean, probably. I don't know in Godzilla Minus One whether Godzilla is a he or she, but I bet Godzilla is more like actually temperamented like Godzuki.
Yeah, and we should say that this nomination is in the field of visual effects, and it's also good to note that Godzilla Minus One had a budget of around $10 to $15 million, which I would argue should send a message to all those Hollywood big budget films that spending $200 million to make your movie look like it was a PlayStation 3 game is not necessarily the best use of money.
Yeah, well, we already knew that it was possible to make a really great visually effective movie with special effects and VFX on a short budget because we had District 9, right?
That was
phenomenally done.
Yeah, if you use great cinematography, amazing lighting, and great practical effects, you can make a really, really great movie. And then, like, you know, you can still use visual effects when you need it. But, like, that combination, like, if you just get the right people together and you're paying them properly, you can make a really effective film, great visual storytelling, and it doesn't look like garbage, like someone playing a video game. And I really wish more movies would take that into consideration, because I'm so tired of going in, and when it comes to a big action scene, I just check out because it doesn't look real at all anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. We will link to an article about this on our website. I will get it up this weekend. The article we're linking to is on Vulture, and I love how they ended their article, which is, when reached for comment about this honor, Godzilla said, "Screonk."
Yes, I thought that was great, too. That actually did make me laugh when I got to that point, because I didn't expect it.
Yeah. So you don't like awards, Jonathan.
No, I do
not.
You
like not even the Razzies?
Especially not the Razzies, actually.
Same.
Yeah.
Same.
Because, like, no one sets out. All right, I won't. Let me not use the absolutes.
Sharknado.
99%. That's different. That was a film made by committee. It was a total, like, cynical approach to filmmaking. But, like, when you're actually trying to make a movie, 99% of the time, you're not setting out to make a bad movie. You're not setting out to make something that is poorly made or poorly executed. That's not your goal. You want to make something that is going to entertain people. And I think holding stuff up for ridicule when it doesn't deserve it really is just really crass and tacky. So I don't, I don't love the Razzies. Now, occasionally the Razzies are there to hold up those instances where maybe it's because of like studio interference, where this is to say, hey, studios, stop messing with people when they're making their movie, because you're just making it worse and you're hurting yourself down the line. Or it's to call out really bad behavior, right? Like if a director or an actor or somebody is truly a bad person, like I think those need to be called out. And if it's in the form of a Razzie where you're like still getting the message home, but you're doing it in a way that's kind of entertaining, I guess it's okay. But just to make fun of films, even if they're, you know, quote unquote bad ones, I just don't find that particularly cool or entertaining. I will say, in the list of Razzies, just like with the Oscars, I have seen precisely two of the movies that are among all the different nominations.
Which two have you seen?
Well, first of all, let me list off what the worst picture nominations are, just so folks know what movies were warranted as the worst according to the Razzies. And there was like almost 1,200 people who voted on this. So, The Exorcist Believer, Expendaforables, also Expendables 4, Meg 2 The Trench, Shazam Fury of the Gods, and Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey. I haven't seen any of those. So none of the ones that were nominated for Worst Picture are among the ones I've seen.
I feel like in the spirit in which it seems like Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey was created, that one deserves a spot.
Yeah, that feels like that's almost like a Sharknado thing, right? Like it was clearly made because there was the opportunity to take advantage of this IP. There was never an intent to actually create anything of value beyond exploiting an IP. So I agree with you. That deserves its place. So the two that I have seen is Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. That one I saw, I think on a plane. Like I didn't see it in the theater. And then the other one is Indiana Jones and the Dumb of Destiny.
I've seen one of these movies, and it was Quantumania, which I wouldn't say it was a great movie. It certainly wasn't at the top of, I've talked about it on the show. It wasn't at the top of the Marvels by any means, but it was an enjoyable popcorn movie. They did a couple of things that I enjoyed.
I did not find that much entertainment in it. I would put it above the Eternals, which is the worst one I've seen. I have not seen all the MCU movies. There are a couple that I still haven't seen, but the Eternals is probably the bottom of the barrel for me.
And then I feel like things like Meg 2, like that is a comedy. It's not supposed to be great cinema. It's supposed to be fun. I feel like that one's not made by committee like Sharknado, but it is supposed to be tongue in cheek. So I feel like, and my friends who enjoyed Meg 1 really enjoyed the Meg 2. So I feel like sometimes it's weird to put a movie in that's supposed to be funny and a little bit cheesy and does it well.
It does it well is the important part, right? Because like the Sharknado movies argue that that's what they are, but I've seen Sharknado. That is not what Sharknado is. Because Sharknado is not effectively funny. It's just bad.
Yeah. And then some, like you said, like nominating actors and actresses as like the worst. These are good actors and actresses. It's oftentimes not their fault if their character falls flat.
Yeah. Could be the director, could be the editor. I mean, there's lots of things that go into shaping a performance. Actually, same thing you could argue for a great performance, right? Like sometimes, sometimes saying like best actor and actress, this is another reason why I don't like awards. It's not really fully honest because an actor's performance is a collaborative effort. Obviously, the actor needs to put forth a very strong foundation, but directing and editing go so far into shaping that performance that it really is a collaboration.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is why I understand why a lot of times, like in things like Oscars, I would assume, you know, so we get a lot more of the less sparkly movies as nomination because there's less to hide flaws behind, right?
Yeah.
It's a more straightforward production. My husband actually shared something about this, like about editing. So he saw a clip on social media about The Usual Suspects. I don't know if you've seen this clip, but in The Usual Suspect, there's a lineup scene where everybody's supposed to say, "Hey, give me your keys." And then they use a derogatory term, which is not like impossible to say on our show, but we try to keep it a little bit cleaner than that.
Yes.
Yeah. And in this lineup, when you watch it in the movie, it's like a game of make a different choice, right? Everybody says the line a different way and it's hilarious. Apparently, when they were filming, they were all supposed to be nonplussed with the police and deadpan, and they couldn't get their stuff together. They kept cracking up and laughing. And at the end of the day, the director's like, "You guys aren't giving me anything to work with." And that made them crack up even harder. So at the end of the day, they hadn't hit what the director wanted. And he's like, "Fine, we're done. We will figure it out." And it's a brilliant scene.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And that's all editing.
The other part of that story is that supposedly Benicio del Toro was breaking wind the entire time.
Yes.
And that's what was starting to crack people up. Yeah, because I've seen various actors talk about that scene and what was going on and about how the director was like beside himself. He was so frustrated that they had spent all day trying to just get this one scene, and he felt like they didn't have it. And it turned out to be one of the most memorable sequences in, like, when you're talking about a sequence that creates an ensemble, that was the one.
Yeah. And like the performances were great, but it was also a lot of editing. You wouldn't have known that it wasn't on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. You would have thought that was exactly how it was supposed to be. So that was, again, a show about how all of these different components come together. Well, moving on, let's talk about some of the stuff we have. This lineup's not quite as organized as we usually do, but we've got some fun stuff. And the first up is the full trailer for the Netflix series, the live action remake of Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Yeah, it looks pretty accurate to Avatar: The Last Airbender.
The effects look a billion times better than the M. Night Shyamalan version.
My friends, when the trailer dropped, were like, "Oh man, this fixes all the ills of the M. Night Shyamalan one." And I was like, "I know I watched it. And I know I didn't like it, but could I tell you anything I didn't like about the movie?" No.
Yeah, I know that. I know. So I didn't see that one. My wife did, because she's a huge fan of the animated series. I think if I were to show her this trailer, she would be far more enthusiastic about this adaptation, because it does look like it is much more true to the original series. And like I said, like, it just looks like it's better made, not necessarily more expensive, although maybe it was. Like, it's a series, not a film, so obviously you can't break it down. It's not apples to apples. But it just looks like it was made with more reverence for the source material. And I'm glad that it doesn't feel like they've tried to make it grittier or edgier, right? This feels like... Mm-hmm. This is something like, if I were 10 years old, I would be so on board. I would be excited about when this show launches.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. I will say I had a friend say, don't get too excited, 'cause we're going to cancel it after one season, 'cause a bunch of stuff that friend enjoys watching has been canceled off of Netflix. And part of it is, you know, cost versus intake. So, you know, if you like it, make sure you watch it and make sure you finish it. I know I'm notorious for watching a series and then getting distracted in the last couple of episodes, but that really does play into whether they keep a show for multiple seasons, is whether people finish the season.
Yeah.
And whether they finish it in a reasonably timely manner, probably like within the month of it coming out. I don't know for sure, but I think we've talked about that. I think that was reported recently.
Yeah.
Well, so,
and there's also, like, obviously if it turns out that you don't like it because of whatever reason, then that's legit. Like, there's no shame for not liking something. Like, I know a lot of people who really, really wanted to love the Cowboy Bebop live action remake and then just felt that it wasn't what they were hoping for. And as much as they loved the visuals and the music and everything, they did not connect with the series. And so when that was not renewed for another season, they were like, it's a shame, but it wasn't what I wanted. So I'm not broken up about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not saying to watch it if you don't enjoy it, but if you do enjoy it and you want a second season, make sure you finish the first season.
Yes.
It's going to hurt the metrics. And like some of that is like how much it costs to make the show, but like One Piece got a second season and that has a lot of special effects too. So
yeah. So
Stranger Things has a lot of special effects too. So it's not just because it's an expensive show to make.
Wait, what? I could have sworn the Demogorgon lived right down the street from me.
I mean, they did film it in Georgia, but
yeah, it's true.
Maybe. Maybe. Do you hate one of your neighbors that much?
Do I hate one? Why are you talking about one?
Oh no. Hey, let's move on.
Ariel, I live near a hippie commune. Okay. So
I don't want to get you all stressed out again.
Drum circle that meets regularly in my neighborhood.
Oh goodness. I'm sorry.
Actually the hippies are all fine. It's all the townies over at the Pullman train yard that drive me nuts. Anyway, because I still don't know what pickleball is, but I refuse to learn. Anyway,
I think it's like badminton.
Something. I don't think I'm ever going to bother learning. The day I learn, I'm going to be sad because it probably means I'm going to play it. but next up, so it's 2024, in case you didn't know. Some days I don't. And part of what happened in 2024 is Steamboat Willie, the original Mickey Mouse cartoon, finally went into the public domain. Because its copyright finally expired. Now, to be clear, Mickey Mouse is not in the public domain, just Steamboat Willie. So the Steamboat Willie version of Mickey Mouse is in public domain, but any other version of Mickey Mouse is still under copyright. So it's kind of like a rolling copyright for Mickey Mouse. As different eras come up, then he'll enter public domain. But obviously, just like with Winnie the Pooh, the fact that there was the opportunity to take advantage of this IP that is now in the public domain meant that it was only a matter of time and not a long one before someone did it. And thus we have a teaser for the return of Steamboat Willie.
Which is a movie, right?
Yeah. And it's made in the Unreal Engine. So it's a computer generated film. And the trailer gives you no information whatsoever other than the fact that this is a horror take on Steamboat Willie, and that's it. Like, there's literally no other info about what the story could be or if there even is one.
Yeah, the beginning of the trailer is very nice and pretty, and I was like, oh, this is nice, and it doesn't stay that way. I will say the beginning of the trailer looks almost realistic, and then the end of the trailer looks very much like I've stepped into a video game.
Yep. Yeah.
But there also have been a couple of video games, and I can't remember offhand because it's not in our show notes because it's older news, that like as soon as Steamboat Willie went into the public domain, they dropped that character into their video game. Like, they were just waiting.
Yeah. Yeah. Because when you think about iconic characters who have incredible value from an IP perspective, and also the fact that a lot of people look at the Walt Disney Company as a company that has a chip on its shoulder, because that company more than any other has been responsible for extending copyright protection in the United States. Like, they have lobbied so hard to get copyright law changed over and over again that I think a lot of people are, one, they're like, I want to be able to tap into this incredibly valuable character and exploit it so that I can make money. And two, man, I really want to stick it to Disney because they have worked so hard to make it impossible to take advantage of created characters by making copyright last so freaking long. So yeah, I get it, but it doesn't mean that the stuff they make is good. It doesn't mean that it's bad necessarily, but it's way easier to make bad stuff than it is to make good stuff.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of bad, we got a trailer for the final season of The Bad Batch by Disney.
Yep. Yep. I watched the trailer and I can't tell you what the heck is. I haven't watched Bad Batch. Like, I haven't watched any of the Star Wars animated stuff. So I haven't watched Clone Wars or any of that. So I watched it and I was like, don't know what's going on. Don't know who these characters are. Don't know what the stakes are. None of this matters to me.
It sounds like Wanda Sykes was a voice in it.
Yes.
That's what I can tell you.
Apparently Wanda Sykes was piloting a ship at one point.
Yeah, I haven't watched Bad Batch. I've heard good things about it. You know, I think, what is it, 4 seasons now is a fine run.
Yeah.
3 or 4 seasons is a fine run for a cartoon. Not everything needs to be forever years long. So yeah, if you like it, that trailer's out if you haven't seen it already. Next trailer is for something I hadn't heard about at all. It's called Constellation. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a series on Apple TV, and it's like a space thriller mind bender, and it looks really fun.
Yeah.
Fun? Is that the right word?
It looks like it would be gripping and entertaining, but in like that thrilling way. Yeah, I think of it as like Gravity mixed with Jordan Peele's Us, right? There's, it starts with a woman who is aboard the space station. There's a catastrophic accident. She uses an ejection pod, escape pod, essentially, to get back to Earth. When she gets back to Earth, she returns to her family, but things are not the way she left them. And there's a question of like, is there some sort of parallel universe thing going on? Is this a multiverse kind of film? We don't have any answers to any of this, but obviously things are not the way she expects them to be. And that's where the tension comes from.
Yeah. Because other characters notice it too. I'm interested in that. I will probably watch it.
Yeah.
It's not too, it doesn't look like gory, so I'll probably watch it.
Yeah, it looks tense. And Mike from Breaking Bad is in it, and he plays a scientist, and I am excited to see that.
Yes, me too. Me too. I love that actor. I loved him in Buckaroo Banzai. I loved him in Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul.
The fact that you called him out from Buckaroo Banzai impresses the heck out of me, because he had hair back then.
Look, I watched Buckaroo Banzai for some reason, maybe it was at like a bad movie night, after I watched Breaking Bad. So it was easier to recognize him that way.
Yeah.
And I watch every movie. I watch every movie in that way of like, where do I know them from? And it's just, it's a hard thing to turn off.
Sure.
Because I like comparing performances. Just like I like comparing Anthony Ramos's performance in Transformers to his new performance in Bob the Builder.
The fact that you put this into our lineup, I was like, I'm just going to let Ariel talk about Bob the Builder, because I literally have no connection to this material whatsoever. The fact that you used to work with kids tells me that maybe you do, but I don't.
Bob the Builder's a show for little kids. It's like a Nick Jr. show. It's all about, you know, kids like construction. A lot of kids like construction. So it's kind of what it's about. And it teaches good values. And they're making a movie about it. Jennifer Lopez's company is producing it. And Anthony Ramos is like the main voice. And it's a story about Bob the Builder goes to Puerto Rico and starts building. But then it has like some bad effects. And so he learns a lot more about the country he's in and how to build and make things better. So I think it sounds like it'll be a really good story in being like ecologically and locationally aware. This is not the right terms, but that's what came to my brain.
Yeah. Regionally sensitive, maybe.
That's correct. That's it. Jonathan, you are, as always, much smarter than I.
It's because I didn't waste my time watching Bob the Builder.
Look, the amount of things that I have watched passively while making coloring pages for my students is a lot.
Yeah. I mean, listen, no, I don't actually have any gripe against Bob the Builder. I don't think that Bob the Builder is bad or anything like that. And I like things that have messages and can help teach values and concepts to kids. I like all of that. So as much as I'm joking about Bob the Builder, it's literally only because I'm too old for it to be relevant to me in any way. And so that's kind of why I just stayed out of it. Cause it's like, I don't have kids, so I never watch it. It was not a thing when I was a kid because television had only just been invented. So, you know.
You're not that old, yeah. Jonathan. Yeah. Television was invented way before you were born.
It's true.
Way before you were born.
Well, here's the thing, though. Here's the thing about Bob the Builder is that
I would love
to see the connective tissue between Bob the Builder and our next story, which is the remake of the classic action movie Roadhouse. And if Bob the Builder showed up in Roadhouse, I would watch all of Bob the Builder.
maybe Bob the Builder built the Roadhouse. Maybe, you don't know.
That's possible. Yeah. So for those who somehow are culturally ignorant of the masterpiece that is Roadhouse, it was a Patrick Swayze vehicle from the 90s where we learned that pain don't hurt. That was the valuable lesson of Roadhouse. Yeah, where Patrick Swayze plays a stoic man's man of a bouncer for a really rough and rowdy bar, and then gets embroiled in local politics/business dealings that involve a corrupt business owner, and hilarity ensues. And it's terrible. Roadhouse is a bad movie. It is schlocky. It's entertaining, especially if you like action movies and people slugging each other, but it's not good.
No. However, the trailer for the new Roadhouse looks kind of good.
Yeah, no, I agree. I watched this trailer and I was like, this is the way remakes should happen, right? Like, if you're going to remake a movie, remake it where it's different enough, where you have an opportunity to tell the story in a really good way, potentially in a way that's even more effective than the original. And I haven't seen the film, but based upon the trailer, it feels like that's the direction they went in, and I sure hope they achieved it.
Yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal is a UFC fighter who gets into some fights and then gets conscripted to help at a roadhouse that's been having some like bad clientele in Miami. So
actually, I think it's the Keys. I think it's in the Keys, not in Miami. Keys.
Okay, yes, in the Florida Keys. So you know, a similar story. Who knows if it's like. I can't tell if it's similar enough to be called Roadhouse.
I think it is. I mean, like it's the same basic plot because, again, there's like a local businessman who's what's crazy is that this is a plot from the 1980s, y'all. The plot from the 1980s is business bigwig wants to have some property owned by a scrappy small business owner. That's the business bigwig. Who's the main bad guy? That's their goal, and they will stop at nothing to get hold of that property. This is the basis of like endless 1980s action and comedy films. Like there's like Ski Lodge movies. There are One Crazy Summer has this plot. Like there's endless plots that fall where evil developer wants land.
I'm pretty sure the plot goes even further back than that. I just can't name any movies offhand.
But it's funny to me to see a movie in the year of our Barbie 2024 where it's that plot brought back. And I'm like, is this because Generation X is now reaching into their elderly years? Like maybe that's why this is happening. Not that I'm complaining. I'm just asking questions.
It's because retro things are popular again. So no, it's the Gen Z who discovered Roadhouse, but only through TikToks and memes.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised that they're able to watch anything longer than a minute and a half. That's an old man.
Apparently that's Gen Alpha.
But yeah, I watched this trailer and I was determined to think like, oh, this is going to be terrible or whatever. But y'all, it kind of looks like a fun, like not a heavy one, not a thoughtful movie, but like a fun action film. Like when you have one of the guys get his butt kicked by the good guy to the point where his arm is broken, but then he's like the rest of the trailer, he's like, he seems like a pretty good guy. like he's got his arm in a cast and he's talking about the bouncer. He's like, yeah, he seems like he's really got it together. I'm like, okay, I kind of need to see this.
Yeah, it looks like there's a good amount of like humor and lightheartedness in it. Which is my favorite. Like, that's my sweet spot for Jake Gyllenhaal movies, is anything where he gets to be funny, either a little funny to a lot of funny. Like the Lunch Bunch gang, lunch set, whatever. He's hilarious in that.
Well, he's great in his behind the scenes interviews and stuff too. Like when he was doing press for Spider-Man, like his interviews along with Tom Holland were some of the most entertaining that were out that year.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I really enjoyed his, I didn't watch a whole lot of his interviews, but I did see the Hot Ones one and that was delightful.
Something less delightful.
Yes.
Involves layoffs. So Microsoft finally was able to secure its acquisition of Activision Blizzard, which was something that took more than a year to complete. But in the wake of that, it's not like it's necessarily a surprise, because usually when you have big acquisitions, you get a round of layoffs that follow as the two organizations start to determine where there might be overlap. But that's what we're starting to see, both on Microsoft's side and on Blizzard's side. Now, we specifically have a story about Blizzard, but Microsoft likewise is doing layoffs in their Xbox division in order to consolidate these two groups. But yeah, we have a story here about Blizzard, not just laying off some folks, and but also canceling games.
Yeah, there was an untitled survival game. It was codenamed Odyssey, that they had been working on for quite a while. Apparently, like, it had development issues. They had changed to an internal engine that made it more difficult to develop. And like, there's even rumors that it was really just a vehicle to get new developers in. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a recruitment tool. But it had positive reviews from everybody who was able to kind of like poke around in it. So it's sad that it's not happening. And probably sadder for the people who came on board to work on the project and then either had that project canceled or got fired.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, obviously getting fired would be the saddest of the various outcomes.
Yes.
Because, you know, hopefully if they were not let go, then they can be ported over to another project, maybe one that they can have some ownership of, or at least feel like they've contributed to and create something mm-hmm. really great. We have been in a kind of a beautiful time for games in general, in that a lot of really, really good games have come out over the last year or so. There've been a few clunkers too. Not everything has been perfect, but my hope is that we see that continue on throughout 2024 and beyond. And that I hope this acquisition, this merger, will lead to some really great creativity as the teams merge together. You always want for the best, and you want any negative impact to be as small as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I will fully admit that I haven't been following video games this past year, but apparently I should.
Baldur's Gate 3, Ariel, you gotta.
Look, I asked for that for Christmas, and my loving husband was going to get it for me, but we have to figure out which game console we want to upgrade for me to play it, because I'll probably want to play it. My gaming computer is also not, it's old.
Yeah.
So I have to upgrade one of my devices that I can play Baldur's Gate 3 on, because it doesn't play on the one and it doesn't play on the PS4.
Yeah. I don't know if I would want to play it on console, because I mean, but I haven't used the user interface for console. I'm very used to computer one, and that to me works really well. But the character creation, the story, I haven't even, like, I've been playing that game so slowly because it's so good that I don't want it to be over.
I'm sure. And we are going to upgrade our systems. It's just like, we haven't had a lot of time to game in my house in the past couple of years.
Sure.
And there also haven't been a huge amount of games that like have super appealed to us. My husband's getting back into it now, 'cause we're remembering, hey, this is a good way to like be active in your downtime, like mentally active.
Yeah.
As opposed to just sitting, watching the television. You know, I've started playing Skyrim again on the Xbox 360 that we have upstairs. That's no longer supported, but it's upstairs. So, and that's fun because I got Skyrim at a time where I hadn't played a lot of console games. And so an open sandbox world was really difficult for me. I'll say the interface is still a little difficult because there's not like a good way to find all of your quests once you're given them, like, other than just explore this giant city. But it's fun. But yeah, I do want to play Baldur's Gate 3. That is on my list. There are a couple other ones too. Tony just finished up Dad of War 2, and that was a lot of fun. So
yeah, I want to say what is it called? I'm looking it up now to see if I can find it. But like, it's whatever the Yakuza series has changed its name to. Like, the latest one just came out that everything I hear about that sounds like it's an absolute blast to play. That's the one that I want to tackle next. Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth. That's the name of the game.
Gotcha.
I want to play that one. It's apparently you play a real doofus who goes from Japan to Hawaii, and it has all sorts of really silly mini games and stuff, and everything I've seen about it just makes it look really appealing. So that's like, after Baldur's Gate, that's probably the next one I want to tackle. Anyway, all that aside, our hearts go out to all the people who have been affected by the layoffs over at Microsoft and Blizzard. And I hope that they are able to find gainful employment at other studios really soon.
All right. The next thing, this is going to be really quick, but I just wanted to share it because we talked about it priorly. There were talks about How to Train Your Dragon live action movie being in development, and the struggles about making those dragons look real between, you know, digital effects and practical effects. And Creature Technology on TikTok released some videos of them making like these animatronic versions of the dragons from How to Train Your Dragon. And now I'm completely on board with a How to Train Your Dragon live action movie. Like, does the story need to be retold in live action? No, but I think visually it can be done.
Yeah, the TikTok's very impressive, especially when you realize that that footage is like a decade old. They made those for a traveling stage show for like a decade ago. And the animatronics are enormous. Many of them are capable of moving across vast distances of stages. Like, they're not just stationary. I'm used to seeing animatronics that are rooted in place, right? Like, they don't move. So you have to work around that. Well, a lot of them have the capability of moving like across an entire stage, and they're huge and beautifully designed. Yeah. That TikTok, it's real short, but it's incredibly impressive, and it'll be in our show notes.
Yeah. They do a lot of stuff that's incredibly impressive. Okay. We got a few more stories. We got to kind of rush through them at this point because I am running out of time. The next is that Disney has introduced their new hollow tile floor, which everybody's like, it's the closest thing to the holodeck. And I was like, oh, great. Like, images projected. But no, it's a really cool floor that will do everything it can to bring you back to a certain spot on the floor, no matter where you move.
Yeah, the idea being that the floor is made up of these hexagonal tiles. Each one is essentially an omnidirectional treadmill. And imagine that you're standing in the center of a room and you take a step forward and take another step forward and take another step forward, but you're not actually moving forward with regard to the rest of the room. You could use this in something like virtual reality settings where you've got a headset on. And so you can feel like you're actually moving through a virtual space, but you could also use it to move objects around on the floor. Like you could put a solid object on one part of the floor and have it through these tiles zoom across or change directions. Like they said, you could use it in like a Star Wars type of feature where you're using the force and you're moving your hand around. And by moving your hand around, you're guiding an object to move around the physical space, which does sound really cool. Mm-hmm. So they've got a lot of ideas of uses beyond virtual reality to things like stagecraft and stuff. It's really neat. I would love to learn more about how it works, but really they just showed it off while they were inducting a Disney Imagineer into the Inventor Hall of Fame, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah. I feel like watching that person walk on it, and then like you can have multiple people on the floor at the same time. The way that I walk, I would get to the end of the room before it could bring me back to the center.
Yeah, it's clearly still in a prototype phase, right? Like it's not designed.
Yeah.
It's not designed yet to be able to handle person walking at a real stride at a real pace. So it's like everyone's doing like, you could either think of it as toddler steps or old person steps, where you're going pretty slow and making pretty short steps in order for it to compensate. But that makes sense because it's new technology, and plus I'm sure it's going to be super challenging to make it so that you could walk at a regular pace or even maybe run without potentially catapulting the person across the room and slamming them into a wall.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very cool. We'll also have a link to that article and video in our show notes at largenergoncollider.com. We have two more quick trailers. And the first one is a Dev Patel and Jordan Peele collaboration called Monkey Man. At first, I was confused. I thought it was another season of Hit Monkey. It is not at all.
Yeah, this is like a revenge action film where you've got like the beaten down, downtrodden character who's trying his best to right wrongs. And it's an action film, a fighting film. And y'all, the trailer looks real good if you like action movies. Like if you like fighting films, I think this looks like pretty, pretty spectacular.
It's like if they cast Dev Patel as John Wick, but then put him into like a UFC movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this one looks really entertaining. I definitely want to check it out. And then our final one, of course, I couldn't let it go. I couldn't not do this.
You could have, though.
No, I couldn't.
I said I wasn't going to admonish you, but you could have let it go. You could have put this anywhere else in the lineup and ended on a happy Monkey Man.
Listen, skeptic, Monkey Man will make you believe. If you know what that reference is, make sure you shout out to us, because if you know what Monkey Man will make you believe comes from, I'm really impressed. But our last trailer is for, of course, as is tradition on Large Nerd Drunk Collider, a horror movie.
This tradition.
I established like it, tradition. And it's called Stop Motion.
I know, I hate it. I love you. I hate this. Yes, it's the opening scene is a woman laying in bed, and it looks like she can't move, so it looks like it's sleep paralysis, which I get. And it's really disturbing because then a little creature comes in to mess with her, and I hate it. I hate it so much.
Yeah, so the trailer shows that one of the main characters is a woman who makes stop motion animated features, and the figures she makes are pretty grotesque, and she's working on a project, and then this little girl comes in and decides that she thinks the story that the woman's trying to tell is boring and tells her a terrible, horrifying, scary horror story. And then the puppets seem to be having a mind of their own, but is it in her mind? Is it really happening? Is it supernatural? Who knows? But it's creepy.
It's creepy. Why is her daughter so creepy?
Is that her daughter? I just thought it was a little girl.
I assumed it was her daughter, but it could be just a little girl. It could be the little girl in the story that she tells, although they don't look alike. Yeah, this passes my threshold of horror that I'm comfortable with. But if you like it, enjoy the movie.
No, this looks really interesting to me. Like it intrigues me. My worry is that it's going to be one of those things where the trailer makes it seem like it's one kind of movie, and then when you see the film, it's a different kind. Not that the different kind is necessarily worse or anything, but sometimes that feels like, oh, you didn't know how to market this movie, so you ended up creating a trailer that's misleading. Hopefully that's not the case here, because I think the story they seem to be hinting at in the trailer is one I want to hear.
Cool. You'll have to let us know what you think when you watch it.
Will do.
I'm not. I know better. That one I know better. There are certain things that I'm told Ariel do not. That's one of them. That and Night Swim. Well, that brings us to the end of our very long show. We will try to make our shows a little bit more personal-sized pizzas in the future, but we just had so much to catch up on. Thank you for all of your patience in our hiatus and for listening. And Jonathan, if they want to talk to us about any of the myriad of things that we've discussed today, how can they reach out?
Well, you're going to make your way down to the local hospital. And when you get there, you're going to go into the actual gift shop of the hospital. And when you walk into there, you're going to see lots of just weird stuff that you just wouldn't associate as a gift shop. I mean, they're going to have things like flowers and stuff like that. But you're going to see like aprons. Who needs an apron when you're in the hospital? But you're going to walk up to those aprons. And when you look behind the third apron hanging from there, you're going to see a weird little Christmas ornament. And it's going to be the figure of a badly burned doll. And this badly burned doll is going to slowly turn its head and look at you. And when you look into its eyes, you're going to feel yourself as if you're falling forward, toppling head over heels, falling into a deep void that exists behind this doll's lifeless eyes. And you'll hear the sound around you kind of become muffled and dull, like something heavy is sitting on either of your ears, and you'll start to feel like it's hard to breathe, like the air has grown really thick and humid. And just as you're starting to panic, as you can feel your heart beating so fast it's going to burst out of your chest, you're going to fall through a sheet of ice, and on the other side of it, you will be in a featureless world. Standing there, and in front of you will be me, and I'll be trying to take these frickin' EKG stickers off my chest, and I'll be screaming a lot because it's pulling all the hair off my body, and I'll say, yeah, what do you want? And you can ask me your question.
Just use baby oil. That's what they use on television to get tape off of hairy bodies. Yeah, if you need a different way to reach us. I don't even know how to. If you just need a different way to reach us, you can reach out to us on social media. Let's see if I can remember these. On Twitter, we are LNC_podcast. Yes, I know it's called X now. And on Threads and Instagram and Facebook, we are Large Nerdron Collider. And then also on Discord, we're Large Nerdron Collider. The invitations on our website, www.largenerdronecollider.com, should still be active if you want to join the Discord and talk about the things that you watch and enjoy and get conversations going. We've had a couple about like Doctor Who and some other stuff. And if you want to email us, we are largenerdronpod@gmail.com. And I think that's it. We do have a Blue Sky, but I'm really not on there. So until next time, yes, that's what goes next. I have been Ariel Rusty Dusty Kasten.
And I have been Jonathan, I gotta go oil a baby, Strickland. The Large Nerdron Collider was created by Ariel Kasten and produced, edited, published, deleted, undeleted, published again, cursed at, by Jonathan Strickland. Music by Kevin MacLeod of Incomptech.com.